The Hawks stormed home in the second half at Adelaide Oval, giving the reigning premiers an almighty scare. It wouldn't be enough, however, the Pies sneaking home by 5 points. There were positives, there were negatives, there were talking points aplenty in a jam-packed gather-round, and we're back with a brand new Hawk Talk podcast to go over everything. My name is Nick Mason, and tis our second trip to Adelaide, and yet another nail-biter that didn't quite go our way.
Another defeat by less than a goal, but it wasn't a meek performance by the boys, was it? It was subdued in the first half, and then they came storming back, and but for a miss from Connor McDonald, we would have been cheering in the aisles along with every neutral supporter at the ground.
Yeah, I think we had everyone behind us, and wasn't it bloody exciting in the end?
Oh, tremendously exciting. 38 points down, and it's half time, and we're thinking Collingwood by how far? And then, well, I've been critical of the move, putting Hardwick forward, but it seems with Seamus in the team, we didn't lose anything from it, and we gained a very, very good forward.
It seemed to be the move that the Magpies weren't expecting at all. They really struggled to have an answer for Dimmer, who slotted, what, 4 goals in the end, and just looked like a total natural.
4 goals, one. Could have kicked another. It was just so nice to have a forward who created his own space and then slotted the goals.
It was what we were sorely needing, really, with the personnel that we had out. I mean, as we covered, this forward line wasn't at all how we had calibrated it at the start of the season. You know, no Lewis, no Watson, no Bruce. That is half the forward line suddenly out of the lineup, and all those plans are decimated. It was going to take something special to find some scoring power, and that's where Dimmer stepped up.
Even Amon looked good in his role. You know, he played a very good game. And then Newcomb started hitting his straps. And Warple was good in patches, although not as good as he'd been previously. But our pressure was better. And, yeah, it was a very good, determined performance after a first half where almost nothing went our way, including some of the umpiring decisions. For the team to band together, as young as they are, with one bloke over 30, and oh, just the spirit of the side came through in that contest.
And this is what I've been banging on about this season, is the fact that this team has a certain DNA about it to be a successful side. You do not claw your way back into a contest like that. And it's not the first time we've seen this from Hawthorn. They're making a habit of it. Would I rather they didn't? Of course. I don't want to see them cough up goals in bulk and have, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes of madness that could spell the end of the contest. I don't want them to do that. But the fact of the matter is, we've seen a pattern this season where Hawthorn have looked dead and buried. And it started in the preseason with the Dogs. They have shown a pattern of being able to work their way back in. And you don't get that with West Coast. You don't get that with North Melbourne. Okay? So while we are in the bottom part of the ladder, I feel like we're building towards something. But my goodness, the coaches have to work out ASAP what is happening in these small segments of games that threaten to completely end the contest.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a gargantuan effort to get back into the contest. And then we were riding our luck in the last few minutes and it could have fallen our way. I sort of felt that by law of averages, Collingwood would have to lose a close one. But no, they held on again. And we're left to lick our wounds. And I think Sammy was like, oh, I feel sorry for the players not tasting success because they work so hard.
They worked their backsides off. I mean, you put it this way. You talk about what it took Collingwood to get the job done at Adelaide Oval against us. They turned in the most pressure of any team this year.
Wow.
That's the entire season. That's comp-wide. They had to turn in that kind of effort to get past lowly Hawthorn. How's your premiership defence going, Collingwood? Not so good, it seems.
Now, who do you want to talk about first? Because you've been vindicated here.
Is this my moment to take a victory lap? I really don't want to because I'm not arrogant about it. And also, I think it's very early in the piece. But Lloyd Meek is looking the goods at the moment. I see no reason to get Reeves back into the lineup at the moment.
And what did you think of Ramsden?
Ramsden just needs more time. I was delighted with his first goal. I was so happy for him. It's been a long time coming.
And it was a, you know, he had a good performance. He had presence around the ground. He took relieving marks as well, as did Meek. He got back in defence and took relieving marks. And he also had 7 clearances, Meek himself. 4 tackles. You know, he was the highest Supercoach scoring player for our side. Just a wonderful effort. And then the next bloke who I had been lamenting about, you know, why have we put him so far back, Carl Amon, if he, you know, he had great impact on games. And then this week, we're all in a changed role after halftime. He took 900 metres gained.
Yeah, 903 to be precise, 28 touches in all, and 7 marks to go with that as well. He topped our AFL fantasy points. So, I mean, his influence could not be understated there. Lloyd Meek, by the way, with 18 touches.
And a consistent number of touches each quarter. And Newcomb with his 10 clearances, huge pressure points, 18 contested possessions. And it's great to see him kick that goal. He wasn't looking back after that.
Yeah, that was classic Jai on the run, wasn't it? We've seen that a few times from him and got the crowd up and about. The other guy I want to talk about is staying with the midfield. We've highlighted this guy before, but the fact is he keeps on turning in massive games, and that is James Warple, the guy with the second most impact with ball in hand of any player in the comp. That is according to Champion Data. That is statistically verified, mate. James Warple is one of the best players in the comp at the moment. That's second only to Isaac Heaney, who we know is in fabulous form.
Yeah, so fabulous that they were still worried about West Coast halfway through the last quarter.
Ah, come on. West Coast still haven't won a quarter for the year, have they? I think that's still intact, isn't it?
Oh, is that right? I wasn't paying that much close attention. I was out at Morphettville and with Tucky. He was out there with me. We weren't together, but we were both there.
James Warple just keeps on getting it done.
Yeah, he does. And it was a concerted effort, but he certainly had less impact in the second half than in the first, and only 7 contested possessions. He had more uncontested possessions this week. So a different game from him.
If we're talking about a tale of two halves, it is that the guy you mentioned before, it's Amon,
yep,
who really stepped it up. He was a huge factor in allowing us to get back into the game. He didn't do much in the first half and then just came to life when it mattered most.
And I thought Sicily and Scrimshaw gave a really good performance. I know Collingwood aren't that tall in the forward 50, but I thought they managed it really well after halftime.
Well, you know I'm a massive Scrimshaw fan, and I don't think that's going to change. Certainly off the back of this performance, that felt awesome as a Scrimshaw fan to see. Because make no mistake, I mean, the narrative will be that Hawthorn came from the clouds. And they did. They did. Don't worry about that. But that is not to, that is overlooking the fact that Collingwood kept on pressing themselves. They did not have no avenues to goal. They surged. They really wanted to put the nail in the coffin. And they couldn't find a way. And that is thanks to the efforts of Sicily and Scrimshaw, who I thought were just epic. They stood up when I was sure that Collingwood were gonna put this thing to bed.
Now, there is a school of thought that I've heard from a couple of Pies fans, and I'm not sure they realised the implication of it, but they said we only got back into the contest because Pendlebury left the ground.
Okay, all right.
Well, I was like, well, you know, be cautious about this because that is future present. That is in the offing. That is not far away. Pendlebury not being in this side.
Yeah, he might be leaving the ground for good soon.
So if that's what they're going to roll out. So Pendlebury's off and Sicily's gone through Tom Mitchell in a marking contest, which got a few oohs and ahs. So it had a bit of feeling in it that game. And then we haven't even gone to Ginnivan, but he was the one that really sparked the crowd and he just stares down any haters, doesn't he? It's incredible.
He's completely resistant to any pressure. I mean, if it was going to come in any game, it was going to be this one. And off the back of being in the headlines yet again, if it was going to be a game where he might go to water, it would have been in Gather Round. And yet he stood up. And it didn't take long for him to hit the scoreboard either. In again, classic Ginnivan fashion. It's so controversial. The head-high free kick. Of course, it had to be that way. That is just how the footy gods wrote it.
And although he didn't have as many possessions and he was pretty hard-ridden for most of the game, You know, he still impacted the contest with one of his highest pressure games for the club. So, oh, look, he's just going to be fantastic for us. And I really did feel that if we'd had Watson in tandem with him and also Hardwick and Moore, who played a very good game as well, goodness, we've got a lovely little quartet there.
You know, sometimes I'm a bit reticent to be that guy who falls back into those excuses of, oh, well, you know, if we had have had so-and-so, then, of course, the result would have been different. But on this occasion, I wholeheartedly believe it. There are so many players on the pine at the moment who are sidelined with injury. If we have our full complement, I really do think that we turn that result. I'm very confident of that.
Maybe, but also I love the fact that we had such a young team and we got this result, and a lot of these fellas wouldn't have got the nod if we didn't have that list situation.
That is true.
I know Butler didn't have much impact, and I know Hustwaite didn't have much impact either, but they got a taste, and I can tell you Hustwaite was a bit unlucky. He's definitely better than he looked. It might take him longer to get into the game than that.
I think so. I'm not sure that sub is the correct position for him, but Sam Butler was a bit disappointed. I imagine he'd be disappointed with his own efforts there because he really had an opportunity to stake his claim. He'll probably get another opportunity this week. I don't see him falling out of the side. In fact, I don't see us making many changes, but he'd want to be more involved, more impactful, and more dangerous across the ground, I would say.
Yeah, Sam Butler wasn't playing anything like the role he plays for Box Hill either.
Not at all. Not at all, which was weird to see.
Yeah, which is a lot harder. You've got to change your game to fit in at a faster and higher impact, less time to make your decisions. You know, so it's tough, but, you know, three touches for the game isn't really enough to probably keep him in the side, I wouldn't have thought, but, you know. Chol, he could have kicked three goals. You know, he had them worried early, Chol did. But, gosh, he competes so often and provides so much spillage to our small forwards.
Make no mistake, Mabior Chol is already emerging as far more impactful and important to this Hawthorne unit than Jacob Kaczynski. And I know that is incredibly hard. I don't mean to boot him on the way out, and being at Richmond now, I don't mean to do that, but I'm loving what Marbior is bringing to this side. I mean, he's the guy that threatens in the air, taking big contested marks. I want to look at our contested marks here. We talked about Scrimshaw before. Three contested marks. Lloyd Meek had two, Sicily one, Ramsden, Hardwick. But then there's a man here that we haven't talked about yet, and that is a man by the name of Dylan Moore.
How many did he have?
He had two contested marks, including one that is nominated for Mark of the Round.
Okay, is it?
Yep, that was at the southern end, so that was the opposite end for us, but you could still see it all the way back there, how magnificent that was, a huge contested grab, and in the context of the game as well. But ended up kicking three goals, mate, and some really important ones.
That goal that he kicked, where it was still a toe off the boot of Hardwick, but this time it went unpunished. And went through, got to the right side of the pack, and yeah, Moore kept his head and drilled the goal. Can we go back to that moment where we thought we might win it?
Do we have to?
When Connor McDonald steadied himself and time seemed to slow. Didn't it feel very slow? Because he seemed to have a lot of time and took a lot of steps.
He had a lot of time, and Connor McDonald would be most disappointed with that finish, as we all were, but then it happens.
I wasn't really that disappointed because everyone stood up in front of me, and you know me, I've got my record on my lap, so I can't stand up immediately or I'll drop the record. But everyone stood up, and then I saw the ball fly over the top of my head. So it couldn't possibly have gone through the goal. And you heard the sigh from the... Because we were on the hill.
Well, just in front of the hill, yeah.
Yeah, just in front of the hill.
But that was the moment, mate. I can't help but be disappointed. I am a huge fan of Connor McDonald, so obviously I'm not going to hold it against him or anything like that. But that was the moment. That was time for Hawthorne to hit the front. And, you know, sometimes, even with shots like that, you fluff your lines, it doesn't work out your way, and it's a chance gone begging, unfortunately. Of course, you know, I mentioned Mabior Chol before. He had shots at goal too earlier in the game. So,
no, other people missed, that's true, but that won't help him feel any better on the flight home.
No, I suppose not, but yeah, he's not slipping out of the side.
I don't think he's the type to let that influence him. He's a very confident young man. So, but he had a down game, and he had the, you know, every now and again the moment falls to you and you got to take it.
I think he's exactly the kind of player that will be taking those moments in future. There's a lot to like about Connor McDonald. Mate, you wanted to talk about the atmosphere of Gather Round.
Yes. So we attended, how many games did we attend? 4, 5? There's a lot.
Four in the end.
That was the atmosphere that impressed me the most. Maybe it was because it was the first time we were really in front of the hill and getting the impact of that wave of... And we did have a few Collingwood fans yelling at Ginnivan. That was that was quite interesting. Love turned to hate. It's the most vitriolic of all language, I suppose.
I think the adjective I'd land on is primitive.
Yes, it wasn't well thought out, a lot of it.
Because, you know, footy fans usually have that reputation of being very cerebral and intellectual.
Well, even David Roden had a look around at one point. he was the goal umpire, and he just had a brief glance. But, yeah, no, it was fascinating to see, as Hawthorn were coming back, just how hungry everyone was for Collingwood to lose.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd really came to life in a way that I don't think we'd really seen in the other games that we had. I know that's sort of a little bit of Hawthorn bias creeping in, but the closest game we had was that we attended, I mean, is Geelong versus the Western Bulldogs.
And there was a bloody Mexican wave.
Which was good fun, but I suppose it did kind of undercut the atmosphere. But also, you know, we were sitting sort of near the Bulldogs cheer squad, and it was all a bit lame. It was all a bit meek. Even when they were in the contest, it just didn't really generate the kind of electricity you'd hope for. We didn't really feel it until our game.
Absolutely true. And then, of course, you had the retaliations from the Geelong supporter base that was situated near the cheer squad of the Dogs, and all they'd yell out was scoreboard in a very sort of, well, like blackboard out of... Mr. Squiggle, really?
Mr. Squiggle.
That's what it reminded me of.
I mean, that's the frustrating thing about those guys, because they were young punks, and there was about five of them trying to troll the whole Dogs cheer squad, who frankly, as I said, deserved it because they were lame and their chants sucked. But yeah, these young punks, all they would do is "we can't hear you" and "scoreboard". And the frustrating thing about scoreboard is that there's really no retaliation. There's no rebuke. Scoreboard will always win.
But it's the truth of the matter is probably half of them weren't even Cat supporters. They were just... retaliating.
But that just speaks to the good, wholesome vibe of the entire round, which I really loved. I mean, as you say, I think my favourite football moment of our trip was when Hawthorn started to get back into it. Because as you referenced before, I think you put it quite well, there was a hunger. Like, there was just this palpable thirst for Hawthorn to get over the line, and everyone felt it building. And it was just incredible.
And you only had to look over at McRae and how nervous he was. And then they had the... they must have put a cameraman right in front of the box of Sam Mitchell. They were piping those images into the ground all night, especially when we were 38 points down. But, yeah. Oh, look, in a broader context, this is really good for the team because they know they can match it. They know they can play really, really well. They know they can go on runs of goals. They know they can protect their end from scoring for long periods. Just in the second half, I mean, let's face it, on Monday, you would never have expected this kind of performance because they haven't had as long to prepare for it as Collingwood. And, yeah.
Undermanned, forward and back, not too many levers to pull this Hawthorn side. And as you say, coming off that short break, including an out-of-form midfield at times. It's very much been underperforming this year. You would not expect this kind of moxie, this fight, this spirit. Now all they've got to do is not drop their heads. They've got to keep this spirit about them and know that they will get their reward if only they keep on plugging away.
Well, it does take a certain bravery to be 38 points down. I know your back's to the wall and you haven't really got much choice, but to get the ball and want the ball and then take risks with the ball when you go forward. I thought it was a very good balance. We didn't hold on to it too long. We tried to get it in quickly to the advantage of our forwards, even though Moore was down there. Captain Moore of Collingwood was down there just roaming around trying to pick them off. I thought they didn't overdo it in their plans for attack. I thought it was still very balanced, but it was a hard-nosed, we want the ball more than you do.
So I wonder where Hawthorn fans in general sit with this performance, because I've seen a bit of both sides of the fence on our social media interactions. And, you know, I've seen a lot of fans who, I suppose, sit with us on this. I find that we're relatively upbeat and positive in spite of the results. But then there are other fans that say, you can't forget about the first half. That was abysmal. That needs to be fixed.
Definitely.
So there's this cognitive dissonance. You can be torn either way.
But sometimes you need to realise that you got to let go of some plans. And I hope some of the plans that they had in that first half we don't have to endure again. Because it was very predictable for Collingwood. They knew exactly what to do. And that second half, we were unpredictable and we were relentless.
There's a couple more talking points I want to go over with you, mate. The first one being Finn McGuinness. We knew that he'd be recalled to the side and we knew that he'd have a job. I don't think it was quite as obvious a victory over Dacos this time around. It was more of an understated performance. But what did you think?
Well, look, he was on Nick Dacos in the first half. And Nick Dacos had 11 in the third quarter when McGuinness was moved off him. I think he did a job. He also had 18 touches himself, McGuinness, at 83%, which is marked improvement. He got into space, got 12 uncontested touches, is very good pressure points, second only. No, hang on. We've got Nash with 73, Newcomb 69, and then McGuinness with 47. So he's really bringing some heat. Warple, I've missed at 53, but he's really bringing some heat to the contest. And apart from a duck egg in the last quarter, where I'm not sure what his role was, but I remember him getting over the ball a couple of times and being quite frustrated with the lack of poise. Look, that's probably a good performance out of Finn.
And finally, because I think it needs to be highlighted, James Sicily thrown forward.
Oh, in the last minutes.
I'm not against it. You have to try to win. And that involves taking those chances and doing something a little bit out of the ordinary and just seeing if anything sticks. I don't mind that from Sammy.
I was in the world of the imagination thinking, how could we win this? And, you know, putting myself in their shoes and thinking, what would I do? How, you know, where should we position these guys? And then all of a sudden it felt like I was out there because I had this elbow in my ribs and it was you going, look, there's Sicily. They've put him forward.
Well, it just kind of reminded me of what they do in the NHL, right, in the ice hockey where, you know, if the game's on the line, if it's in the third period and they need to try and manufacture a win, they'll pull the goalie.
Can you imagine if that ball had dropped to Sicily? Because he basically just stood 10 metres in front of the goal square.
It was just to create a bit of chaos and uncertainty and see if we could manufacture anything to get the result that we're after. It didn't come off, but I quite liked that from Sam. As I said, it reminded me of pulling the goalie and just playing with one extra down there and just seeing what the hell you can do. Why the hell not? Might as well go down swinging, right?
Yeah. You know, Sicily, Scrimshaw, Impey, Amon, they were all terrific in the back half in that last quarter, just picking up the pieces when the ball squirted out from Collingwood.
Impey was such an important playmaker when it came down to it.
You know, hopefully we start the game against Gold Coast as we finish the game against Collingwood.
Well, it does come down to what I was saying before, that 10, 15, 20 minutes of madness. We have to somehow try and avoid and become a more consistently good side. Unfortunately, we've had our troubles up at Gold Coast. We never play well up there against them. And we're returning there. People First Stadium, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. It's Gold Coast hosting Hawthorn. That one's going to be live on Channel 7. What moves are you making, mate, in terms of inclusions and omissions? What are you thinking?
Well, there's no Box Hill game, was there?
No, that's right.
Makes it a little bit difficult to bring someone in will be a little underdone maybe, but do we give Butler the benefit of the doubt? It was a pretty anonymous performance.
I think we do. I mean, who else do you want to bring in? Because anyone else you're considering, anyone else that's in the frame typically, normally, doesn't have any form currently. Because, as you say, Box Hill didn't play. So if you're thinking about O'Sullivan, well, I'd like him to have a bit more game conditioning. It really only played a half for Box Hill against Geelong. And then Bennett's, yeah, maybe. It's not the exact sort of role, but, yeah, I'm not sure. And then we look at the injury list. There's no one that's come off the injury list this week. There's no one suddenly available who I'd back in. Everyone is one or more weeks away still. So I don't think we actually make changes to this side at this stage.
Surely you have to. You can't have a first half like that and give it the tick, can you?
Well, no, I hear that, but I'd only counter with what changes are you making in that case. I don't know who you want to bring in.
There are a few at Box Hill that have been putting their hand up, but not really for positions here. So
no, that's right. I just don't see the changes that we'd be likely to make at this stage. Is the first half unacceptable? Well, completely. But I'm not sure what you do at the selection table at this point in time. Speaking of injuries before, CJ is 1 week away, recovering from a hamstring. Lewis is still 1 to 2 away. Bruce, likewise. Will Day is 2 weeks. Wingard, 3 weeks away, recovering from an Achilles. 3 weeks.
My goodness. He is going to rip it up in the VFL.
The recovery has been outstanding. Nick Watson is 3 to 5 away. DGB, 5 to 6. Will McCabe, 9 to 11. And lastly, James Blank, of course, is out for the season.
Yeah. So Suns, North, Sydney, Dogs, and then St Kilda down in Launceston, which you're travelling for, aren't you?
I am indeed. So if we can mark that one down as a W, if we have our full complement of players back by then, that would be fantastic. Thank you very much, Hawthorne.
That seems quite good. But let's talk about Reeves and Meek and how they're going to have to work this out. How are the club going to handle this? Because this is they've backed Reeves at the start of the year. He hasn't shown up with the goods. And now they've got Meek, who's very, very determined. Certainly not an elite tap ruckman, but just the determination and his ability to compete and contest is probably what's going to keep Reeves in the seconds. But if Reeves is in the seconds, he's not going to progress with the other parts of his game, is he?
Well, I suppose not, but that's probably where you have to prove yourself. If that's his lot at the moment, that's the phase of his career, he's going to have to find a way to impress beyond being a tap ruckman. And really, I'm quite sick of that argument that, oh, no, he's a really good tap ruckman, to which I would say he's 211 centimetres tall. I would bloody hope so.
Right, but that's important. First use is a thing, you know. It's we got a fair bit out of Ramsden, but there are some who would say, shouldn't you, if you're going to play two rucks, shouldn't you have Reeves and Meek?
Not necessarily. What we're looking for with a ruck at this stage is someone that can impact forward, because Meek isn't doing that necessarily. Reeves hasn't been doing that. Ramsden
did.
Well, I know he kicked one goal on the weekend, and he can play that role for Box Hill, but what, he's 3 games into his career.
And he also crashed a couple of packs, which I admired greatly. He was a bit nervous early, but after that he was more than willing to make contact with opponents.
So this is my argument. If you're going to play two rucks, then one of them probably should be a guy that has some forward nous, and that's Ramsden at the moment. To what extent he can bring that, still the jury's out, but, you know, we've got an opportunity to try him. I would expect that he keeps his spot in the side for the Suns. I see no use in omitting him.
Fair enough. Well, how do you think we will go against the Suns then?
Oh, shocking.
Oh, really? Even after that performance?
Yeah, even after that performance. I get nervous with Suns games these days. I remember back in the golden years that I knew that we would pulverise them, but this era of Hawthorn struggles against Gold Coast, and so I get nervous, and especially up there, I don't know, mate. I have come to expect that it's not going to be pretty, and that is just the superstitious part of me, not backed by anything. I must admit, I haven't been keeping a close eye on Gold Coast to know how they're travelling, but I know they lost against the Giants, who are a pretty bloody good side.
The Giants ran over them late, but Gosh, I'm trying to think of the last time I saw the Suns live. Would that have been Ruffy's testimonial game, so to speak?
Yeah, Ruffy's farewell. I've seen them since. I saw them down in Tassie, I think it was last year or the year before, with my dad, and we got the win that day, so that was nice. But again, you know, knock me down with a feather. I did not expect that we would win against Gold Coast, because I just have this attitude of just being so nervous with these games.
But the last time I saw them live before that, 2014, it was nearly a 100-point margin. So,
well, yeah, I mean, they've improved a bit since then. Their list profile is completely different. They seem to be on the up, but I don't know how much to trust it.
What I'm saying is I am the factor. If I'm there, we're good.
All right, let's book you some flights then.
And if you're there, we're good. So,
so what you're saying is we've returned from Adelaide and we're hopping a plane to Queensland now. Is that it?
Maybe not this week, but I'm saying that if we're not planning to go back to Adelaide and we want to influence Hawthorn's destiny, it seems like Gold Coast is the spot.
If I knew I had that much cosmic influence, I wouldn't be using it for this.
It's either that or Canberra, mate. You take your pick.
All right, fair enough. I think I owe you a Canberra trip anyway. The Suns' form line, obviously we said they lost the Giants. The previous week, they got demolished in Ballarat by the Western Bulldogs. Just got over Adelaide, who we know this season don't seem to be much chop. I don't know what's happened to Adelaide, but they aren't travelling too well. And they did a number on the Tigers to start their season, to open their account.
Yes, you made me say for the song, for the Adelaide loss.
It's very mean of me. I know you hate Melbourne. That was an underwhelming first game for Gather Round. I tell you what, mate, it went up from there, thank goodness.
It did. I was gunning for Adelaide and they couldn't get it together. And their best forward is Taylor Walker. And then you look through their list and when they were selected and you're like, it's tough when you don't get those first rounders right.
Well, I've heard that from David King today, who seems to have come up with the pearl of wisdom that if you get good high draft picks, that tends to go well. Thanks, David.
Well, I don't even really rate that because I think it was 8 or 10 of that Geelong team that we saw, which shouldn't be winning because they had a day less than us on for recovery and made fewer changes. They've got about 8 to 10 very late or rookie draft picks performing excellently. It's about development. It really is.
Oh, well, I think that's part of the issue with David King's take is a little bit shallow. There's a bit naive and tunnel vision on getting high draft. And anyway, if we're talking about getting high draft picks, well, maybe if you're North Melbourne, David King, bloody bug it off and let someone else have some picks in the first round, maybe we might be cooking with gas.
Oh, now, don't be like that. They do give them up pretty readily, as we saw with that Port Adelaide game. My goodness, he was doing everything.
The Iceman.
The Iceman, yeah, I was calling him the Iceman. But he's going behind the ball, back with the flight of the ball. That was lovely. To see Connor Rosie play as well as he did in that midfield, wow. You know, that's and for Essendon to be absolutely deplorable was quite good fun as well.
I've never been so entertained by a neutral 70-point or so drubbing. That was fantastic.
I mean, you were quite entertained by Charlie and him finally beating Mackay in a 1-on-1. That was a good moment. But then he decided to kick the wrong side of the ball for a banana kick shot at goal. And, Charlie's... Gosh, I don't know. Fascinating forward line. I really like the way that Port Adelaide play. Like, that was enjoyable.
We've had a lot to say about Gather Round on our Patreon exclusive bonus episodes. We've done a bit of a travel diary in audio form and in photo form now. We've uploaded a few snaps of our adventures. So that's available to our proud, passionate, and paid up Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/hawktalkpod.
So you're forecasting that we've kind of fallen a heap against the Suns because it's quite a bit of travelling for us.
Oh, look, for no real reason other than just my own superstitions. That's it. I hope we can bring our best and more consistently. That is just the hope. I I expect that we could be 0-5, but as I've always said, from the start of this season, I've said it's the manner in which you play out these games. And it has been frustrating to see us fall in a heap mid-game. If we could please just strike that, if we could work on that at the very least, even if we lose, I think these losses will be much more palatable.
Palatable losses. Oh, the club will love to hear that phrase.
Well, I just need effort. I just need consistency. That's all. I don't think that's too much to ask.
I'd say two quarters. Well, we played a half against Collingwood and we gave them a scare. If we play three quarters, we'll be very close to Gold Coast, I imagine.
I think so. I would say my money's on Suns being a lot more vulnerable than Collingwood. But, you know, we'll see. There's something about playing up north that doesn't suit us. It's a big weekend of footy, mate. Box Hill are back in action as well. They're going to be up north too, also at People First Stadium, Saturday, 2:30 p.m. It'll be Gold Coast Suns VFL hosting the Box Hill Hawks.
Why do they do that? If Hawthorn are out of town, I want to be going along to Box Hill. This is garbage. Anyway, yep.
Well, you can get along to Box Hill Hawks VFLW, who are hosting Williamstown at Fenju Stadium. That is City Oval for people playing at home. That's Saturday, 11 a.m. So it's a big Saturday of footy, mate. We've got three clubs, three teams of brown and gold represented, starting with the VFLW, then the VFL, then the AFL that evening.
Where did you say the VFLW is?
That's at home, Fenju Stadium. I believe that's the pronunciation.
Great. Well, I can get my little chair, and I'll just have to go to the end where kicking each quarter, because obviously the ball doesn't go up the other end. They're phenomenal, that team.
Yeah, phenomenal is the word for it. There seems to be a distinct trend this year with our VFLW side of restricting opponents to 1-2 goals, sometimes 0. I mean, Collingwood managed 3 points for the game.
Are you sure they're not raising the ground at one end and then lowering it at the other, and it just tilts in our direction each quarter or something? It's just phenomenally one-sided, some of these contests, and good on them too.
And I mean, that's to be expected in some part because of the AFLW stars that we have in, but unbeaten start to the season so far for our VFLW side, and long may it continue. Very excited to see where they can go from here.
Excellent stuff.
Towards the end of the show each week, we like to highlight how much it helps us when people rate and review our show on the likes of your Spotify or Apple Podcasts, however you're listening to this. The kind words are always appreciated, of course, but it helps to get the word out about our show and reach other Hawthorn fans, so we'd really appreciate that if you could take a moment to leave us a rating or review. Meanwhile, we'd also love for you to join us over on our social channels. We're on X, of course. That's typically been our social media HQ since we started. That's where we're building to a major milestone. Very excited for that, so we'd love to have you on board there. Things are also buzzing on Facebook. Plenty of fun banter happening between our followers over there. And of course, we're on Instagram too, so you can find us on Instagram. And finally, this podcast, as I flagged before, wouldn't be what it is without the support of our proud, passionate, and paid-up Patreon subscribers. A massive thanks to each and every one of you. There's plenty of exclusive bonus content available right now. Lots of coverage of our adventures in Adelaide, including a couple of bonus episodes, as I flagged before, our photo diary. If you want access to all this and our entire archive of bonus material, literally hours upon hours of extra Hawk Talk podcast, you want to head to our Patreon page. It only costs a few bucks a month. All the details are at this address, patreon.com/hawktalkpod. That's patreon.com/hawktalkpod.
Well, it was a pretty successful time in Adelaide, apart from a couple of unlucky events.
Well, people who have heard our bonus content will know exactly to what you're referring to there. It's quite amusing all up, and it would have been nice to cap it all off with a win, but it wasn't to be. The future of Gather Round is going to be interesting. They're talking about expanding it. I'm not so sure that's a good idea, but I'm also not so sure about keeping it in Adelaide either, so I'm a bit torn on that.
What did you think? What do they call it? The live site or something?
Oh, like the festival?
Yeah. Apart from the booths where you could get a footy action card of yourself, there wasn't much else, was there?
Well, it's all for the kids, basically. It's the kids and capitalism coming together, as they often do.
It was the kids and McDonald's, mate. That was what it was.
No, but that's what the festival of footy is, basically activities and activations and merch, and that's basically, and food trucks. That's the festival of footy. And it was very similar to what it was the year before, but there's a bit more going on. And look, I think the AFL, I'm loathe to do this because I'm regularly a critic of the AFL, but they did take it further.
Did they? I didn't notice the difference, to be quite honest.
Oh, I think they did. I think they did a lot better with it. They still have lots they could do. That off the top of my head, I rattle off many things.
Oh yeah, no, that's some of the merch is a bit, but that's AFL. The merch is always a little bit, and then. But I think, you know, it's screaming out. If you're going to be filling kids with McDonald's, you should definitely have a jumping castle. I just think that is for the viewers, you know. That's and Rundle Mall was full of people handing out. Oh, they had, the spot tests, not the running test, but a lot of the spot tests you have to do for the draft combine. That was cool.
Yeah, they had the vertical leap at Rundle Mall.
Yeah, and a couple of other things. And it was good. There were a few sites around where you could watch the footy and hang out with people. And of course, it being a 1.2 million population in Adelaide, it's easy to go anywhere, do anything.
I think it's really pleasing how they progressed it from the previous year, but I think there's also a lot of untapped potential, and I wouldn't be against them moving it out of Adelaide, to be honest, eventually. I know they've got their contract and their deal there for a little while, but yeah, it's a concept that they should take around Australia. I look forward to seeing what they can do with it.
Played a lot of games on that pitch and it was still fine for us.
Absolutely was. Adelaide Oval, listeners, if you haven't been, it is a magnificent stadium. Highly recommend it.
Also, kind of destroys that argument that we can't have curtain raisers.
When did curtain raisers disappear? Because I've always been in favour of bringing them back. I don't really understand why they stopped.
They could have gather round in Victoria every week. What, like we practically do, right? We've got that many games every week. It's just gather round here most weeks and then for 1 week, they take it over to Adelaide. You know, if you could have maybe Box Hill opening before Hawthorn a few more times a year, that kind of stuff, maybe get some curtain raisers with some of the young bucks, Vic Metro or whoever. Yeah, that's the kind of gathering I would enjoy more.
And I suppose that speaks to the untapped potential that I was referring to before. I mean, if Gather Round demonstrates anything, is that there is a genuine hunger for football for everyone. You know, neutral supporters will get along. You put it on, if you build it, they will come. Field of Dreams. How's that, Tiz?
Which was the one club we didn't see a jumper from? I can't remember now.
The Suns. There was a cafe that we dropped into on the way up, which was, I don't quite have the name on the tip of my tongue, but it was a magnificent cafe in Border Town. And then we noticed that they had a display of some of the scarves of the teams, and then they didn't have all of them. They didn't have Hawthorn, in fact. And then on the way back, we dropped in again, and they'd stocked up on all the teams, bar one. And that team, our opponents this week, the Gold Coast Suns. Did not even see one Gold Coast supporter the entire stay.
I didn't either, yeah.
And I think, was it you? Because I was with my girlfriend when we were out and about making our way to the ground. And I think it was you when we were talking about this that said, well, what about Tassie? And we were like, yep, we actually ticked that one off. We saw a Tassie get.
I was surprised how many West Coast Guernseys there were around the traps.
Oh, the poor things.
Yeah. Anyway. I think that's onward and upward, that performance against Collingwood. We were very unlucky, and it gets me excited for some of the other games coming up, especially the North Melbourne game.
Yeah, here's hoping it's an upward trajectory from here for the Hawks. I think there's plenty of positives to take out of that performance, and yeah, bittersweet, absolutely, the way it went down, but I'm of the thought that that can only bode well, that kind of spirit, that kind of fight back. Hopefully the Hawks can capitalise on it as they take on the Gold Coast Suns at People First Stadium, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. We'll be back next week to recap all the action from the weekend of footy. We are a happy team at Hawthorn.